It's the question that has always been in people's minds since Egyptologists first came across him, and in the end there is no clear answer. We don't know if he was influenced by others or if it was something that just came from within himself. He does stand out as, remarkably so, somebody who wanted to be different, to follow a different path from the one that was prescribed for him.
Were there any hints prior to him that the yacht was becoming more popular, that this was something that could be happening in Egypt, or did this really just kind of flower into being?
You can see signs of a growing interest in sun worship, but one that was mixed, that was allowed to fit in with the complex religious system the Egyptians had built up over the centuries. What is so special about Akhenaten is his rejection of everything else and his substitution of the Aten, the sun's disk, just for the entire pantheon of the past.
Recent digs at Amarna have been focused more on the homes of the common people, and I think on a cemetery there. Are these shedding any light on how Akhenaten's raising of the Aten affected the life of common Egyptians? Do we have any idea if this was really something they took to heart, or did they secretly hold on to their old gods?
Oh, there's abundant evidence that they maintained their interest in, if you like, their old gods. I don't think you have to think it was secret. The evidence is so widespread, and the privacy that they would have lived in would have been so slight. You can't interpret the evidence as being underground, clandestine in any way. I think you have to explain it by just assuming that Akhenaten had relatively little interest in what the people at large thought and did. His mind was focused upon his own temples, the relationship between himself and his god, and the rest of the population may not have impinged upon him all that much. Although that said, you can develop an argument, and this is something that we're thinking about quite a lot, that with the temples, which had huge provision for the making of food offerings, there was an element of, if you like, public benefit, that the cult of the Aten was a supplier, a provider of the people as a whole, and therefore there may have been some more generous side to his nature. But as for what was going on in the minds of his subjects, I don't think he was that bothered.
And of course, you are digging at Amarna, but is there any evidence of how widespread the worship of the Aten was outside of Amarna in other Egyptian cities?
There's abundant evidence that he pursued a program to establish Aten temples or Aten shrines throughout Egypt and also into the conquered territory of Nubia. By this time, Egypt had taken over an extra stretch of the Nile Valley, which in modern geographical terms represents the northern Sudan, and that was a place where Aten temples were built as well. With regard to the old temples, the important thing was that their decoration was corrected. He had particular animosity towards the old state god Amun-Ra, and the name and the images of Amun-Ra were very thoroughly removed. But there's some evidence that once that had been done, the temples themselves were not actually closed down, but were allowed to continue to function, but in this purified way.
Amarna was founded by Akhenaten and then again was virtually abandoned once his rule was over. I know that there's some evidence that there might have been some lingering settlement there. How does this help you understand Egyptian society, this city, or does it? I mean, since it is so unique in the fact that there's no settlement beneath and not a settlement on top either.
It is a wonderful slice across Egyptian society. It challenges you to define and understand what a city was in ancient Egypt. Yes, it is unique in its history, and rather unfortunately, it remains virtually unique from the point of view of cities and towns in Egypt generally. There has been far too little excavation of such places, and so it is quite difficult to compare Amarna with other places of the time. But that said, it's very unlikely that he changed in any way significantly the way that cities worked. And so it does give you, on an unusually large scale, this slice across Egyptian society. It makes you ask how cities functioned. It brings home that it wasn't a city really as we experience it now. It's like a series of villages joined together, the whole place functioning like some large workshop full of busy people, probably working mostly for the state, for the court. And most people there, clients, if you like, of patrons who are Akhenaten's officials. This is how they came to be there. I'm sure Akhenaten decided to go there. Automatically, his loyal officials go with him, all his administrators, his priests, and so on. And each one of those would have had more than just a household. They would have had, in some cases, like little villages of retainers, some of whom would be craftsmen, and they'd all have to go there and would then settle down and would work as a large collective towards supporting the court.
I have one last question for you, and this goes back to the religion part of Akhenaten's rule. The cult is seen by some as a precursor of monotheistic religions, and there are even some, I know, on the fringes who try to connect Akhenaten and the Aten to Moses or in Judaism. Is there really any evidence that the worship of the Aten had any effect on the development of Judaism or Christianity or monotheistic religions that came after? Or is this kind of wishful thinking?
To me, it is wishful thinking. I don't see any particular connection. There is a similarity in the poetry between one of the Psalms and the hymn to the Aten, and it's rejoicing over nature. Some of the phrases are repeated, but we know so little about the broad background of the literature of the time, and the nature of Akhenaten's views are so different from those of Judaism, which were linked to a chosen people, whereas there's nothing remotely like that in Akhenaten's thinking. It's a curious mixture of an austere view of God, and yet it is a God who demands all the old-style temples and food offerings. So rather, in some ways, compromising the wish that we might have that Akhenaten is following a very purist view of religion. And, of course, no thought at all that in any way the Egyptians were made more special by this. The Egyptians always thought that they were special, that their word for themselves, Egyptians, they equated with being human. But that's a very old view.